I'm Amy Halperin-Laff.
And I'm John Moskow. This is the Ethical Schools Podcast, where we discuss equitable and inclusive learning environments that help students to become capable of and committed to creating a more ethical world.
There's a new blog post up on ethicalschools.org. It's by Shirley Edwards, the founding principal of EBC High School for Public Service in Bushwick. She writes about the critical importance of relationships in creating a successful school. Relationships between students and teachers and among the school, families, and community. Be sure to listen as well to our April 23rd podcast with Shirley Edwards.
Our guest today is Adan Vasquez, Executive and Artistic Director of the Association of Dominican Classical Artists and the Washington Heights Community Conservatory of Fine Arts. Adan Vasquez is an acclaimed harpist, educator, and community activist. Born in Santo Domingo, he was educated at the University of Chile, Brooklyn College, and the Manhattan School of Music. He coordinates the music department at Gregorio Luperón High School in Washington Heights. Welcome, Adan.
Thank you.
Adan, please tell us a little about the Association of Dominican Classical Artists. What is your music education model?
The Association of the Dominican Classical Artists was founded in 1980 by a group of Dominican, I wasn't here in New York by then. There was a group of Dominicans that wanted to show a different face of the Dominican community. There were classical trained musicians, and they were having one concert a year at least at Carnegie Hall. And the whole idea was to showcase Dominican talent in, Carnegie Hall, basically. That was at the beginning. Then as the association was growing, there were more Latinos involved. When I get into the United States by 1992, I right away joined them, and I have the chance to perform at Carnegie Hall through them. I was part of the board as a vocal, and I was helping. And then when the founder president passed in 2010, then I became the president, and later on I restructured the whole thing. And I had a different idea of how to run this. Instead of going to Carnegie Hall and having a concert showcasing Dominicans on there, I thought about the idea of showcasing Dominican Latino minority art within the community. I wanted to do something more for the community and to show off the community, you know, what Washington Heights can offer to the mosaic of New York City. So we changed the venue. We went to Adonavis Hall City College, and with the support of Vice President Karen Witherspoon, we got the offer of the theater, Adonavis Hall, and then we became part of the residence group at Adonavis Hall. There are four companies. We're one of them, and we have a concert season. We produce four concerts. Now we are producing a fifth with the students at the Adonavis Hall Theater. So at the beginning, people from the community, now people from all over New York are coming to the concert, and we want to be model. That's another thing. The majority of the members of the orchestra, we are minority. Latinos, African-American, woman musicians. So we wanted to serve as model for the kids in the community. Plus, the performers at the orchestra, we are the teachers at the music conservatory that we have in the community, because we want the kids to project themselves. I want the students, when they go to a concert, so they could see, wow, I could play the harp. The harpists look like me. This is accessible for me. Oftentimes, when I take my students to Carnegie Hall, the majority of the people that are in the orchestra, they don't necessarily look like the kids. You know what I mean? They are mostly white or oriental faces. So there is no connection. There is not much connection with our kids with classical music. So what we wanted to do is, you know, make this music more accessible to our kids, for them to see that, oh, cello, I could play the cello. My teacher lives in my neighborhood. I hear cello music constantly in the concert series. So if by now it's becoming a habit for the kids, this is nothing foreign. This is nothing unusual. It's something that they see, oh, you know, the violin, the cello, the harp. So, yeah.
So, when you mention classical music, a lot of people think primarily of European classical music. Could you talk a little bit about Latin American classical music? And you started to talk about why you're focusing on this tradition and folk music in today's Upper Manhattan community.
In one of the concerts, we have four concerts in the series, right? So one, at least one of them or two, they're focusing on the traditional European, the canon of the repertoire, Beethoven, Debussy, Ravel, Bach, you name it, which is important. We have to do that because music is music and we have to play everything. But at least one or the other two concerts, we focused on composers from the Americas, from Latin America, classical music or academic music, to be more precise in terms of, you know, or symphonic music, but with the flavor of nationalism. When I use the word nationalism, I have to be very careful with that, it's a musical movement, it's an art movement that started in Russia at the end of the 1800s, where they were breaking away from the traditional classical music coming from Germany or Austria or France, and they wanted to use folk elements of their music, and then they, with the format of the symphony orchestra. That started with the Russian Five, but that movement started in Russia, and then it went all over Europe, and then it came over to the Americas using a language, folk language, but using the format of the classical, you know, the symphonic orchestra. We have Copland in the United States that follow that model. You take all of these folk tunes and they made it into, you know, orchestral music. So we have that in the Americas. We have that in the Dominican Republic. We have that in Mexico. We have that in Central America. But they don't play that music in the United States that often. So we are becoming the place to showcase that music, to present that music in New York City, where people can go and listen to those composers that they rarely heard, you know, that music to be performed, or sometimes they have never heard that. For instance, we go even beyond, I mean, before that movement, when we do Galant style or classical music style, we did one of the concerts last year, we did Mozart, we did the C.P. Bach, the songs of Bach, and we did all this, you know, traditional music, but we inserted music written in Venezuela, in the Americas, during that period of time. So we are not only using folk, nationalistic music in classical style, but we are also finding music written during, you know, the Romantic period, the classical period, in the Americas, that have never been performed here in the U.S. We want to also perform that, you know, as part of our repertoire. Why we do that? Because we believe in empowering our community. We want the people going to the concerts to realize that this music is not only for, you know, European or from here in the U.S., but also in their country. They have been composers, and even now there are composers who are writing music for this format. Hmm. Did I answer?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Adan, a 6-year program of serious music study sounds like many parents' dream for their children, but may remind some of us of being pushed into music lessons by our parents. So why do most children come to the conservatory? Who stays and why? What do students do with their music or arts education afterwards?
One of the key ingredients that we have in our conservatory is a one-to-one lesson. That's why we are a conservatory. We follow that tradition of, that's the way I receive my education. So we don't do group instruction for instruments. We have the studios because we believe that every individual learns in a different pace. Another ingredient, important ingredient that we have is in the interviews that we have with the parents and the kids, we want to listen to the student that is applying, not to the parent. So we want to see the level of curiosity of the students and how much they like music. I don't want to know how much the father or mother like music, although it's important, but it's the student. because at the end, we are dealing with the kids and we want to know if they really love music, if they really want to do this, and if they are committed to practice every day. So yeah, that's part of the interview. In the past, we made some mistakes. We, you know, the parents wanted the students to be there and because they want them to learn music, but the students, they didn't want to be there and they started, you know, boycotting some classes because they didn't want to be there. So we realized we only want students who really have shown love for music, that they will enjoy, that they enjoy being there, that they enjoy playing an instrument.
What percentage of the students actually stay?
We started with 8 kids in 2011. And from those 8 kids, we have 4. 2012, we doubled the number. And we have 5 of those that they are now graduating from high school. So this is the first thing I've seen that group of kids that they are graduating. So, yeah. I'm talking about the kids that started from 7th and 6th grade because we have had students that started in high school. So they only were there with us for 3 or 2 years. And now 2 of them are teachers in our school. They're studying music in college. So now they're teaching in our school. One of the boys that started with us on 7th grade, and he's graduating next year. He's becoming a teacher because he's in a specialized music school in violin, and now he's going to be a teacher assistant to help the other kids.
What does the conservatory curriculum actually consist of? What do the students do during the period of time?
At the very beginning, when the students start with us, they have to take 3 different classes. One of them, of course, is the private instruction in the instrument of their choice. We start with a minimum of 30 minutes per week. Then they have music theory, that's twice a week, 45, those are group class, learning how to read music. And then we have the orchestra class, that's also, you know, a big group of students, and that's twice a week, 45 minutes each section. And then as they move on, we go from music theory, then we add like singing, harmony, analysis, music history. And we try to go parallel with the curriculum of the Department of Education. So by the time they are on the 9th grade and they're taking global history, they're taking also music history. My experience in the Department of Education, have 23 years as a music teacher there. I have realized that some of my students have learned more history through music history than through the social studies regular class. Because oftentimes the social studies regular class is based on passing the exam and you know the number and so it's like preparing them for the region exam. In my case, because I don't have a region exam, I have the flexibility to go deep on the Renaissance and the Baroque period and to show them through the music how society was reflecting what type of music was being played in the court, but what type of music the people in the countryside were listening to. And when in the Americas, after Christopher Columbus reaches the Americas, how, you know, the transformation. So we have the time and the flexibility to go deep on that. Then the influence on the Enlightenment and how Beethoven transformed music and how the French Revolution made an influence on that. Blah, blah, blah. So the kids end up learning more about history through, you know, music class.
This is exciting. I'd like to be able to go back and take your class. We have a clip of you conducting conservatory students playing Carabinet by Julio Alberto Hernandez. Could you tell us a little bit about this composer and about Carabinet before we play it?
Julio Alberto Hernandez is one of our first composers of the nationalistic movement. He went around collecting all these readings in the countryside, and he's the first one putting them on paper. So he wrote that for piano. And then from there, people have made arrangements for orchestra. So what you're listening there is an arrangement that we did for a piano composition. And again, he took it from, you know, traditional readings in the countryside. So yes, those one of those readings, Afro-descendant readings that if you go to the island and you go to the countryside, that's part of the folklore of, you know, the Dominican Republic that is still alive today. So we took that in, and then we transferred that into the format of classical instruments.
Don, what are your goals for the conservatory students in addition to learning music?
It is, you have to improve that, you know, music helps with the development of discipline, mathematics, literature. Like if you listen to Beethoven music, you can write better essays. If you listen to Mozart music while you're doing your mathematics class, you will do better because there is some activation on the brain. Also, when you play an instrument, you know, this whole thing of you're using both hands and your brain, you have to read what is there, the language, whatever. So you are activating part of your brain that will help with the students with other areas. Also, most of the kids that we have, they don't necessarily have the best discipline. And the fact that they have to practice every day is, you know, help them to develop discipline that will help them with something else in the future. And I can go on with, you know, different areas that we can, you know, through the arts, we are helping these kids. So,
would you say that it has a community building component to it, or in terms of its relationship to the development of the Dominican and other communities in Washington Heights?
Well, we don't limit ourselves to only Dominican music. As you know, we also, well, like at the last concert, we were playing Russian tunes and playing, you know, Hebrew tunes and Chinese tunes. So we play everything. So in a way, yeah. But the community building, like most of the teachers, they live also in the area, and they are not necessarily Latinos or minorities. Some of, you know, they are Jewish teachers, and they live in the community. They live in the neighborhood. Most of them graduated from my alma mater, Manhattan School of Music. But yeah, it's a variety. So
you've talked about your grandmother as Queen of the Palos. Can you talk about what Palos is and about the artistic value of your African roots, and how has this heritage shaped your work and the work of the association and the conservatory?
The Palos and the site where my grandmother, my mother was, you know, they're coming from, is one of the places where the first African slaves settled, were settled in the Americas in about 1520, first group of slaves. So they brought their tradition, their Yoruba tradition, from Benin, I believe it was. And music was one of the few things that they were able to keep alive, that they were allowed to do on Sundays. I mean, you know, they have to mix it up so the masters won't whip them. So that tradition is still alive in the island. And my grandmother inherited that from her mother and the mother. So I remember when I was living to Chile in 1989, I went to interview her because I knew that I was going to see her again. She was 98 by the time, but she told me the whole story. And I also knew the whole story about how that music, she inherited that. So yeah, it's an Afro tradition music, folklore in the island that my grandmother was in charge of, one of many. That wasn't the only one, there are many sites, but she was one of those. As a classical trained musician, I have been going back to the roots of, you know, getting that music, and like Carabiné, for instance, That's one of those pieces. That's not palo, that's carabiné, that's a different rhythm, but it's folklore music. So, yeah, that would be my link, I would say, to that. I don't know if that answers.
As you see it, what is the role of performing arts in catalyzing social change?
I believe that through music, you can transform it. It might sound like a cliche, if you change a weapon for an instrument, you can transform the life of a human being. Most of our students are underserved. There is few things for kids, to do. Cultural projects in our community, they're very few and very limited. And if you take a kid that might be problematic, or a kid, we artists, we are very sensible people. And sometimes we have those kids that they're shy or they have traumas, but you see them when they perform, when they play an instrument, the transformation of those human beings. So you can get a kid that might be a bully or might end up doing weird things. I don't want to, and through music, that person can express all that energy. I believe in that. So if you take all of that negativity that those kids have around and you transform that energy through music, you can change an entire violin society. Oh,
thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners. Visit our website, ethicalschools.org, where you can check out our articles and episodes, including Shirley Edwards' new article. You can subscribe to the Ethical Schools podcast and blog so you get notified of each of our episodes and articles. We're on Facebook, Twitter at Ethical Schools, and Instagram at Ethical Schools Podcast.
And we'll go out with Migraciones by Sergio Arreyes of Guatemala, performed by La Camerata de Washington Heights. Till next week.